Hello, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality in a way that is extremely empowering. Speaking of exploring powerful perspectives, I'm super excited to announce the release of my very first book, The Golden Key: Modern Alchemy to Unlock Infinite Abundance. If you're ready to alchemize the circumstances in your life so that your abundance expands to an entirely new level in 2021, head over to goldenkey.gift to download the audio or ebook as my gift to you by using the code POSITIVEHEAD. All right, all you positive heads, welcome, welcome. Here we grow again. You guessed it. I'm grateful to be back here yet again. It is a magical Monday in the studio. And today, you know, I was debating about what to talk about. And last week I read from Destiny of Souls, new case study of life between lives. Michael Newton, PhD, wrote this book and Journey of Souls years ago. He's basically spent 40 years doing hypnotherapy sessions, taking people through past lives, and then up to the point of death in those past lives, then documenting what they would experience on the other side, and then comparing notes in these two books is pretty fascinating. The different accounts and how they sort of weave together to paint a picture of what, you know, what our spiritual, non-physical lives sort of looks like, is structured like. And I was thinking about what I would do today. And I thought, you know what? I read last week and I saw, after seeing one of my best childhood friends, I spent every weekend at my grandmother's house when I was growing up. And the neighbors across the street, there's a lot of kids, two of them in particular I was really close with. One of them, a female, a little bit older than me, well, her husband, I just saw posted, just passed suddenly. And, you know, it just took me immediately to the thought of how fragile life is. And, you know, it was just yesterday I was playing, you know, with action figures and video games and football and, you know, hide and seek, you name it, with, you know, her. And here all these moments later is we're adults. And then moments later she's married. And then I see her child growing up, and, you know, I believe one child together. You know, she's back east where I grew up, so I don't see her or talk to her regularly now, but just, you know, following on social media. And all of a sudden, you know, her husband, I think what I saw, he's 50 years old, gone, you know, and in just like that. And she posted, you know, I don't know who I'll be without you. And it just got me thinking. It's like, well, maybe I will talk a little bit about, I'll share some inspiration for, you know, those out there who are going through something similar or will go through this. We all deal with it. Death, you know, some point or another, it's our turn, right? And or it's happening around us. And so that's what I love about these books. They really help to shine a light on, you know, who can say for sure if the accounts are, you know, accurate to how things happen on the other side, but they definitely feel that way to me. Makes so much rational sense, the sort of structures and the ideas and the reasons we come into physical and, you know, from the non-physical and for the lessons and the learning and the growth. And so, yeah, it felt like when I saw this just, you know, moments before I was trying to debate what I was, what I would talk about today. So I'm going to pick up the book and read a bit more. And one thing I want to share as well is a quote, or little poem, I guess you will, about death, you know, in the spirit of all of this. It's a poem from Mary Elizabeth Fry. I think I've shared it years back, written in 1932. And it goes like this. Do not stand at my grave and weep. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glint on snow. I am the sunlight on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn rain. When you wake in the morning, hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the soft starlight at night. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I do not die. So powerful. This, you know, realization that death is a birth and birth is a death. When you're born to this dimension, I believe we die to the dimension, the non-physical, from where we came. And it's sort of a departure from there. And that's one of the things, actually, that I believe it's in this book, actually. It kind of runs together in my head where I heard what, when, where, you know, over the 25 years of deep exploration of a lot of the stuff and books and whatnot. But I believe it is in Destiny of Souls or Journey of Souls, where they talk about when someone is in physical, their soul is still there and still can interact and all those things. But there's a part of them that seems like sort of, you know, like almost if you're distracted a little bit. So, you know, which would make sense, right? If I'm a soul and a part of my energy is dipping its toe into physicality in a given moment, which in itself gets weird to kind of conceptualize when you think of there being no time. But I don't think we'll fully be able to grasp how it all feels and works and flows until we're there with our human minds. But, you know, when someone is interacting in the physical, then their soul there feels as if it's distracted doing something else, right? Which I suppose would make sense. So yeah, another quote here is pretty famous. Some of you probably seen Rumi saying, "This place is a dream. Only a sleeper considers it real. Then death comes like dawn, and you wake up laughing at what you thought was your grief." I love that one. You know, all the grief, all the heartache, the loss, and then you're like, oh, surprise, it's not real. You know, you just were too, I mean, it is and it isn't, right? You did experience it in that moment as that way, but behind the curtain, you know, your friends are there waiting for you. Your family is there waiting for you. It's never a permanent goodbye. It's a goodbye for now. See you again. And that is, you know, of course, that brings more comfort to us than just about any concept, I would say, for a lot of people. So yeah, just a little musings about death and beyond the veil. And in the spirit of that, let's pick up where we were last week reading in, I was on page, I left off on page 38 here, and I'd read a few different cases. And you can go back, and if you search Journey of Souls or Destiny of Souls on positivehead.com, you can find all the times I've read over, you know, it's been over a year now. I just pick up sporadically and read from this book or the other. But yeah, here we go, where I left off last week. Angels or other heavenly hosts. And last week I did talk about how, you know, different ways that newly departed souls would attempt to connect with their lost loved ones. Perhaps like my friend's husband is doing, you know, right about now, since it's just happening. It's like that stories of right when they crossed and techniques they would use to try and make connection and let them know, hey, I'm still alive. And this one is, I believe this next case we're about to hear is from, you know, has to do with angelic beings. I'm imagining it's angels or other heavenly hosts. And keep in mind, when I get to the case, I'll kind of change the inflection of my voice when it goes between the doctor asking a question and the people who are under hypnosis that he's talking to. In recent years, there's been a resurgence in the popularity of angels. The Roman Catholic Church defines angels as spiritual, intelligent, non-corporeal beings who are servants and messengers of God. The position of the Christian Church is that these beings have never incarnated on earth. We think of angels as white-robed figures with wings and a halo, theological images which have come down to us from the Middle Ages. Many clients initially think they see angels when I regress them into the spirit world, especially those with strong religious convictions. This reaction is similar to the devotional responses of some people who have had near-death experiences. However, regardless of prior religious conditioning, my subjects soon realize the etheric beings they are visualizing in hypnosis represent their guides and soul companions who have come to meet them. These spiritual beings are surrounded by white light and may appear in robes. In my work, guides are sometimes described as guardian angels, although our personal teachers are beings who have incarnated in physical form long before graduating to the level of guides. An intimate soulmate in discarnate form can also come to the gate to comfort us in times of need. I feel believing in angels emanates from an inner desire of personal protection on the part of many people. In making this observation, it is not my intention to set aside the faith of millions of religious people in angels. For many years, I lacked faith in anything beyond my own existence. I know the importance of believing in something greater than yourself. Our faith is what sustains us in life, and this applies to believing that there are superior beings who watch over us. My case presentations are intended to give weight to the concept of benevolent spirits in our lives. Our spiritual teachers have different styles and techniques, just as teachers on Earth. Their immortal character has been matched to our own essence in a variety of ways. The next two abbreviated cases illustrate my contention that personal guides and soulmates, however they are represented, contact us from the other side if we require consolation. Case 10. The following statement comes from Renee, a 40-year-old widow who lost her husband, Harry, 3 months before our appointment. I waited until after our session before asking her the series of questions that follow. My intent was to have Renee contrast the conscious versus superconscious imagery she had of her guide, Nyeth. Before our session today, have you had any contact with the being you saw in hypnosis as Nyeth? Yes. Since Harry's death, Nyeth has come to me during my dark hours. Did Nyeth appear to be the same to you before and after this hypnosis session? No, I didn't see her quite the same way. I thought she was an angel before, and now I see Nyeth as my teacher. Were her face and demeanor different to you while you were under hypnosis compared to what you saw when awake? Today there were no wings or a halo, but bright light. That was the same. And her face and gentle manner were the same too. I also see that in our spirit group, she can be sharply instructive. More of a teacher and less of a grief counselor, you mean? Yes, perhaps that's it. Right after Harry's death, she was so sweet and understanding when she came to me. That doesn't mean she isn't nice in the spirit world, just more exacting. Did you do anything to summon Nyeth right after Harry's death? I was crying for help after the funeral. I found out that I needed to be alone and very still to listen. Does this mean you heard Nyeth rather than actually saw her? No. In the beginning, I saw her floating over my head in my bedroom. I had my arms wrapped around a pillow pretending it was Harry, but I had stopped crying. She became fuzzy after I first saw her, and I realized then I had to listen carefully for her voice. In the days that followed, I heard Nyeth more than I saw her, but I had to listen. Does that mean concentrate? Yes, well, no, more allowing my mind to go free from my body. What happens when you don't listen properly, but you want her messages? Then she communicates with me through my feelings. In what way? Oh, I might be driving alone or out walking by myself, wondering about doing something, taking a certain action. She will make me feel good about it if I am supposed to do it, if it is right. And what if the action you are considering would be wrong for you? Then what? Nyeth will make me feel uneasy about doing it. I will know in my gut it is a wrong move. My next case excerpt involves a young man who died in a car crash in 1942 at age 36. He gives us another perspective on the mythology of angels from a soul reaching back to Earth. Tell me what you did for your wife after the crash. I stayed around for 3 days with Betty to lessen her heaviness. I positioned myself over her head so our energy fields crossed in such a way that I could soothe her by matching our vibrations. Did you employ any other techniques? I projected my likeness in front of her face. Was this effective? Initially, she thought I was Jesus. The second day, she was confused, and the third day, Betty was convinced I was an angel. My wife is very religious. Are you bothered that she didn't recognize you because of her religious convictions? Not at all. Oh, I suppose it would please me if Betty realized it was me, but her feeling better is my main concern. Betty is convinced I am a heavenly deity. And that is okay, because I do represent spiritual help for her. Would she feel even better knowing it was you? Look, Betty thinks I'm in heaven and can't help her. Her angel is able to do so because it's really me. So I'm in disguise. What's the difference as long as my goal to help her is accomplished? Well, since Betty has not connected you with your disguise, is there any other way you can communicate on a more personal level? Through my best friend, Ted. He consoles her and gives her advice with day-to-day details. Later, I hover over the both of them, sending permissive messages. What do you find humorous? Ted is not married. He has been in love with Betty for a long time, but she doesn't realize it yet. Is this all right with you? Cheerfully, yet with nostalgia. Sure. I'm relieved he can do what I can't anymore for her, at least until she returns home to me. Finally, there are those angel-like spirits who regularly come to Earth between lives simply to help people they don't know who are in distress. They may be healers in training, as was true with a client who said to me, my guide and I assisted a boy in India who was drowning and consumed by fear. His parents pulled him from the river and were trying to resuscitate him, but he was not responding well. I placed my hands on his head to quiet his fear, sent a spike of energy into his heart to bring warmth into his body, and superimposed his essence with mine for a moment to help him cough up the water and start breathing again. We were able to help a total of 24 people on that trip to Earth. Wow, so pretty cool little stories there. I think I'm going to just end it there for today. The next looks like a whole different kind of thing to go into for now, and looks a little bit longer. So yeah, let's sort of leave it there. I do have a song for you guys today. This is a song I think I played many years ago on the show probably too, but we'll play it today. I feel inspired. It's a really beautiful song that speaks to death. And just listen to it. See for yourself. This is Noah Gunderson, Send the Rain to Everyone. Till next time, journey well. Also, before we cue up today's song, as a quick reminder, don't forget to download the Golden Key audio or ebook as my free gift to you at goldenkey.gift using the Golden Key code POSITIVEHEAD. And please, if you enjoy my gift, leave a positive review on Amazon so others can unlock their lives with the help of the Golden Key as well. Send the rain.